ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
गम
गम
दुग्धदोहम
दुग्धदोहम
असतीम
असतीम
च
च
भार्यम
भार्यम
देहम
देहम
पराधीनम
पराधीनम
असत्प्रजाम
असत्प्रजाम
च वित्तम
वित्तम
त्व
अतिथिकृतम अतिथिकृतम
अंगा
अंगा
वाचम
वाचम
हीनम
हीनम
मया
मया
रक्षति
रक्षति
दुख दुखी
दुख दुखी
गम दुग्धदोहम असतीं च भार्यम
गम दुग्धदोहम असतीं च भार्यम
देहम पराधीनम असत्प्रजाम च
देहम पराधीनम असत्प्रजाम च
वित्तं त्ववतीति कृतं अंगवाचम
वित्तं त्ववतीति कृतं अंगवाचम
हीनां मया रक्षति दुःख दुःखी
हीनां मया रक्षति दुःख दुःखी
दोहाम असतीं च भार्यम्
दोहाम असतीं च भार्यम्
देहं पराधीनम् असत्प्रजं च
देहं पराधीनम् असत्प्रजं च
वित्तं त्ववतीति कृतं अंगवाचम्
वित्तं त्ववतीति कृतं अंगवाचम्
हीनां मया रक्षति दुःख दुःखी
हीनां मया रक्षति दुःख दुःखी
गम
गम
अकाव
अकाव
दुग्ध
दुग्ध
दोहम
दोहम
ऑलरेडी टेकन
ऑलरेडी टेकन
असतीन
असतीन
अनचेस
अनचेस
च
च
आल्सो
आल्सो
भार्यम
भार्यम
अवाइड
अवाइड
देहम
देह
बॉडी
बॉडी
परा
परा
अपॉन अदर्स
अपॉन अदर्स
अधीनम
अधीनम
ऑलवेज डिपेंडेंट
ऑलवेज डिपेंडेंट असत
यूजलेस
यूजलेस
प्रजाम
प्रजाम
चिल्ड्रन
चिल्ड्रन
च
च
आल्सो
आल्सो
वित्तम
वित्तम
वेल
वेल
टू
टू
बट
बट
अतिथि कृतम
अतिथि कृतम
नॉट गिवन टू द प्रॉपर रेसिपिएंट
नॉट गिवन टू द प्रॉपर रेसिपिएंट
अंग
अंग
ओ उद्धव
ओ उद्धव
वाचम
वाचम
वैदिक नॉलेज
वैदिक नॉलेज
हीनम
हीनम
डिवाइड
डिवाइड
माया
माया
एक्नॉलेज मी
रक्षति
रक्षति टेक्स केयर ऑफ
ही टेक्स केयर ऑफ
दुखा दुखी
दुखा दुखी
ही हु सफर्स वन मिसरी आफ्टर अनदर
ही हु सफर्स वन मिसरी आफ्टर अनदर
ट्रांसलेशन बाय द सर्वेंट्स ऑफ द डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रीला भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद माय डियर उद्धव दैट मैन इज सर्टेनली मोस्ट मिजरेबल हु टेक्स केयर ऑफ अ काउ दैट गिव्स नो मिल्क एंड अनचेस्ड वाइफ अ बॉडी टोटली डिपेंडेंट ऑन अदर्स useless children or wealth not utilized for the right purpose. Similarly, one who studies Vedic knowledge, devoid of my glory, is also most miserable. Please repeat after me translation. My dear Uddhava,
my dear Uddhava,
that man is certainly most miserable.
That man is certainly most miserable.
Who takes care of a cow?
Who takes care of a cow?
That gives no milk.
That gives no milk.
An unchaste wife.
An unchaste wife.
A body totally dependent upon others.
A body totally dependent on others.
Useless children.
Useless children.
Or wealth.
Or wealth.
Not utilized for the right purpose.
Not utilized for the right purpose.
Similarly.
Similarly.
One studies Vedic knowledge.
One studies Vedic knowledge.
Devoid of my glory.
Devoid of my glory.
Is also most miserable.
Is also most miserable.
Purpose. A human being is actually learned or expert when he understands that all material objects perceived through the various senses are expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that nothing exists without the support of the Supreme Lord. In this verse, through various examples, it is concluded that the power of speech is useless if not engaged in the support of the Supreme Lord. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, this verse implies that all of the functions of the various senses are useless if they are not engaged in the glorification of God. Indeed, the Avadhut Brahman previously stated to King Yadu that if the tongue is not controlled, one's entire program of sense control is a failure. One cannot control the tongue unless he vibrates the glories of the Lord. The example of the milkless cow is significant. A gentleman never kills a cow, and therefore when a cow becomes sterile and no longer gives milk, one must engage in the laborious task of protecting her. since no one will purchase a useless cow. For some time, the greedy owner of a steerable cow may continue thinking, I have already invested so much money taking care of this cow, and certainly in the near future she will again become pregnant and give milk. But when this hope is proven futile, he becomes neglectful and indifferent to the health and safety of the animal. Because of such sinful neglect, he must suffer in the next life, after having already suffered because of the sterile cow in the present life. Similarly, although a man may discover that his wife is neither chaste nor affectionate, he may be so eager to get children that he goes on taking care of such a useless wife, thinking, I will teach my wife the religious duties of a chaste woman. By hearing historical examples of great women, surely her heart will change, and she will become a wonderful wife to me. Unfortunately, the unchaste wife in many cases does not change and also gives a man many useless children who are just as foolish and irreligious as she. Such children never give any happiness to the father, yet the father tediously labors to take care of them. Also, one who has accumulated wealth by the mercy of God must be vigilant to give in charity to the right person and for the right cause. If such a right person or cause appears and one hesitates and selfishly does not give in charity, one loses his reputation and in the next life he will be poverty stricken. One who fails to give properly in charity spends his life anxiously protecting his wealth, which ultimately brings him no fame or happiness. The previous examples are given to illustrate the uselessness of laboriously studying Vedic knowledge that does not glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that the spiritual vibration of the Vedas is meant to bring one to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Many processes for achieving the Supreme Truth are recommended in the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures. But because of the innumerable and seemingly contradictory explanations, commentaries and injunctions, one cannot achieve the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, merely by reading such literature. If, however, one understands Sri Krishna to be the ultimate cause of all causes and reads the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures as glorification of the Supreme Lord, then one can actually become fixed at the lotus feet, at the Lord's lotus feet. For example, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada translated and commented upon Sri Ishopanishad in such a way that it brings the reader closer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Undoubtedly, the lotus feet of Lord Krishna are the only reliable boat by which to cross the turbulent ocean of material existence. Even Lord Brahma says in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that if one gives up the auspicious path of bhakti and takes to the fruitless labor of Vedic speculation, one is just like a fool who beats empty husks in hopes of getting rice. Srila Jiva Goswami recommends that one completely ignore rice speculation because it does not bring one to the point of devotional service to the Absolute Truth, Lord Sri Krishna. ओम ज्ञानातिनिरन्तरस्या ज्ञानञ्जनाशलोकया चक्षुरुन्नतेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतवादिना श्रीवासवादी गौरवगोविन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So this verse is the continuation of the previous verse, the theme of the previous verse, in which it was described that if one studies the Vedic literature very carefully, meticulously, but he doesn't make any endeavor to fix his mind on Krishna, then that is a waste of time. That's just useless labor. And the example of a cow was given. How, and even in this verse, example of the cow, how a man takes care of a cow which does not give any milk. As you know, taking care of a cow is not a very easy job. It takes a lot of labor. And the previous verse also described what kind of great endeavor it is to take care of a cow. First, you know, one has to grow food grains to feed the cow, or you need to have suitable pastures where the cow can graze. And if the pasture is not properly maintained, weeds will grow or snakes can come. And they can actually bite the cow and the cow can die. So, you know, and even at least in this day and age, buying cows is also not cheap. But before, you know, you could get cows very easily. And then, you know, cows can get so many diseases, like mad cow disease or this or that. Because cow also has a body like us, you know, so it is prone to disease also. And then if you do all of that, and you know, you have to put a fence around so the cows don't run away. Like Jagannath Vallabhprabhu, he has a farm in the country, and his neighbor, he has some cows. So what the cows do, they cross over to his farm, and they kick the stones because his farm is on a hill. So all the stones, they go on the road then. And then now the council is complaining to him, you know, there are so many stones on the highway and that can cause so many accidents. So it's a potential hazard. So you see, then they have to build a fence to, you know, so the cow doesn't run away or damage other's property. But after doing all this, if the cow doesn't give any milk, then all that labor is just gone waste. It's just useless labor. So similarly, in this verse, and obviously the person will become miserable. You know, who will be happy, you know, after all that endeavor? The cow doesn't give any milk. And here it describes that when the person realizes that, he stops taking care of the cow, because the cow is not serving its purpose. And due to in this verse describes how that due to his previous reactions, he got a sterile cow, which, you know, is not giving any milk. And because of his present neglect, he's getting more reactions to this. Because in the Vedic culture, the cows are to be protected. You know, cows are very dear to Krishna. So, because of such sinful neglect, then he must suffer in the next life. That's why it's very miserable. But we see in this day and age, when cows don't give milk, they send them to the slaughterhouse. Or, like people told me, those who have horses, when their horses grow old, they just shoot them here. In the outback, they shoot them. So in Kali Yuga, the situation is, you know, much more worse. At least before they won't at least kill it. So then the example is given of an unchaste wife. How that if the wife is unchaste, then the whole purpose of the Grihastha Ashram is lost. Because the whole purpose is to advance in Krishna consciousness. You know, the husband and wife support each other to progress in Krishna consciousness. The goal is the same. So then, if you still beget children, then this verse describes how those children are also useless. And then a body totally dependent upon others. If someone is totally dependent on others, he will be miserable because he is obligated in so many different ways. You know, we can see in the Bhagavatam the example of Jat Bharat. Maharaj Bharat, as a result of being attached to a deer, he became a deer in his next life. So, because of his advanced consciousness, he could remember his previous birth. So then he took birth as, you know, Jat Bharat. So he knew that, you know, what he had gone through. And he was actually born in a very, 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 in a devotee's family because of his performing Krishna consciousness for a long time. To describe, his father was a devotee of the Supreme Lord, and he was a very pakka brahmana. And so his father tried to educate him, you know, in so many ways. But it is described that his relatives were non-devotees, his relatives and friends. So he didn't want to associate with non-devotees. Because, you know, then one can lose one's Krishna consciousness. And he knew that already there was an interruption in his Krishna consciousness. So that's why he started acting in a very strange way. Even the previous text described that text number 17. that the liberated state should wander and engage in this liberated lifestyle, appearing like a retarded person to outsiders. So Jagat Bharat was acting like a retarded person, though within his heart he was glorifying the Lord. He was singing the glories of the Lord. But to outsiders, he was like a mad person. You know, like his father tried, even he didn't respond to his father properly. His father tried to educate him in the Vedic system. You know, he would just do exactly the opposite. Like one example was given, like his father would teach him how to you know, clean himself after evacuating, but he would wash his hands before, not after. So in this way, you know, he would do things totally wrong. You know, whatever was taught, he would do exactly the opposite. And so as a result, everyone was thinking that he's a madman. And then one day his father died, and then he would work only to get food. And then his friends and relatives, they took advantage of that, and they used to make him labor in the fields, you know, and they were given very low quality food. So like that it would work. But the whole point is that he didn't want to get dependent upon others. That's why he was acting like this, very, very independently. He didn't want to get, because if you're dependent upon others, then one is obligated in so many ways. It's like you can see, you know, we are obligated to our relatives and friends. You know, if our relatives calls, then you know, we have to fulfill the obligation. Our friends, you know, they like some friend might have helped us, you know, in our accommodation or something. So we are obligated to them. So he didn't want to be obligated to anyone. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we know one who is fully surrendered unto Mukunda, he has no obligation. You know, he's not obligated to his family, wife, children, friends, cows, you know, demigods. You know, we are obligated to demigods because they are giving us the essential supplies because of which we are sustaining our existence. And you know, other living entities, the great sages. Of course, in this day and age, you know, it is just, you know, there is especially in the West, there is no system of obligation. You know, it's just fully independent. You know. So once you hit 16, 18, you move out. There is no obligation. So and charity also. If one does not give charity for the right purpose, he loses his fame and happiness. His reputation is lost. You can see in the case of Bali Maharaj, when Vamana Dev approached Bali Maharaj for 3 paces of land, and you know, he said, "Why only 3 paces? I can give you whatever you want, you know, the whole kingdom." But Shukracharya said that he is actually Vishnu. With 3 paces, he'll take over the whole universe. And so he was telling him, you should not give him charity. And then Bali Maharaj was explaining that how if one does not give charity, he loses all his fame, you know, all his good reputation goes away, all his happiness goes away. Like when I was working before, I came into Krishna consciousness. While I was in Krishna consciousness, you know, every Friday this tax brother goes around work. Even these days people do charity, but you know, they don't do for the right purpose. They are in the lower mode. So sometimes this, you know, loto goes around. So all my colleagues would contribute for that, you know, whatever, $5, $10. I would never contribute because I know they're using it for sinful purposes. So in their eyes, my reputation has gone down. they will see that, you know, this fellow never contributes, you know, the Hare Krishna. Something wrong with him, you know. He never contributes, you know. He never takes part in these parties we have, you know, all the drinks, and so, you know, he doesn't contribute for the AFL, you know, this is their charity. But obviously they don't know what the highest charity is. Highest charity is distribution of Krishna consciousness. So similarly, one who studies Vedic knowledge, devoid of my glories, is also most miserable. So So we can see that in the Vedic literature is divided into three sections. There's the Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda. Karma Kanda is basically rituals, you know, different kinds of rituals, pujas, this, that, yajna, you know, to achieve material happiness. Then there's the Jnana Kanda, speculative philosophy. And there's Upasana Kanda, which is Bhakti Yoga. Also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the teachings of Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami, there's that Mahaprabhu describes to Sanatana Goswami, he gives that story of the astrologer, his name is Kalvagya. Sarvagya means all-knowing. So, there's this astrologer, Sarvagya, and he approaches one person who is in a very distressed situation. You know, he's crying. So the astrologer asks him, "Why are you so unhappy?" So he asks him, "Well, why are you so unhappy?" Let me remember. Yeah, he sees this person very unhappy. Then he says that, You're very unhappy because that person's father died untimely and he was a very poor person. So he was very unhappy. So he tells him, "You're very unhappy because your father who had died untimely and he had a great treasure and he left it somewhere." So when the poor man finds out that, you know, that his father was very rich, immediately, you know, his lamentation went away. Then he describes to him that he has this treasure somewhere over here. And he told him, "You should not dig in the south. Because in the south there are wasps and drones." So the south is compared to Karma Kanda ritual. So we can see even in Bhagavad Gita, in 2:42, Yamimam Pushpitam Vasham Pravadanti Avipashita Veda Vada Ratha Patha Nanya Dasti Valina. That men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend creative activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification in opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So we can see that actually men of small knowledge, that we can see that in the Vedic literature, 90% of the verses are dealing with Karma Kanda. Majority of it. Because most people are men of small knowledge. They want to pursue material happiness. So the Vedic literature, in order to prevent them from getting degraded, because if the Vedas don't give this facility, they will take up to sense gratification anyway, you know, and then they'll be engaging in the karma, sinful activities. So in order that they don't fall into the vikarma category, these different injunctions are there, you know, this karma kanda is there. So that gradually they elevate themselves. So we see, like, you know, sometimes people are very attracted to rituals, so they do so many rituals so that they can achieve happiness, you know, more happiness in this lifetime. So, and as they are associating with the priest, then they find out that there is actually, that through Vedic rituals you can go even to higher planets. You know, they hear about this. So then their aim is to go to higher planets. And as Gita 9:20 explains that they are the three Vedas, the Brahmins who study the Vedas very thoroughly. And they worship different demigods, taking them independent of the Supreme Lord. And they worship the different devtas like Indra, Chandra, and indeed they go to their planets and they enjoy a very high lifestyle, you know, very the sense gratification, sense enjoyment is on a much higher level. So they enjoy that. So through association they find out, okay, there are other planets also, there is life also there, and through through Vedic, through these rituals, one can elevate oneself to that platform. But what is the result? The Gita describes Shine Punya Bhartya Lokam Vishanti. That when the credits are exhausted, one has to come down to earth, come back to earth. It is like you have a debit card, you know. Debit card is filled with $20,000. So you go on a holiday, you know, you keep spending, you swipe it here, swipe it there, you buy this, buy that. And then you run out of money. So then you, like backpackers, you know, they have some money, they are traveling all over the place. So when they run out of the money, they have to work. They're working in a bar here or there to save some money. Again, then they travel around. So it's like that. When the credits are over, so then one comes down. One has to come down to earth. Then they come back to earth and again they execute these rituals again. So in this way they're going up and down, and they rotate in this cycle of birth and death. So finally, when they keep doing this for many births, and one day it clicks to them that this is all actually very miserable. You know, there's not much happiness in this. Then they realize that actually I'm the soul, I'm Atma, I'm eternal. You know, and this body is temporary, this material world is temporary. You know, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, it's all places of misery. So maybe I should come out of the cycle of birth and death. Then for them, this Upanishads are there. The Jnana Kanda is there for them. So that these different Upanishads are there, so that they can study the transcendental subject matter. So that is the western side, I think. The Jnana Kanda is compared to the western side. So the astrologer said, you don't dig on the western side, because there's a coast which will haunt you. And then you can't find the treasure at all. And then he says, don't dig on the north also. On the north there's a snake, there's a very poisonous snake. And that is compared to the mystic yoga process. So in the mystic yoga process, the tendency is to become one with the absolute. Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport that the tendency is to become one with the absolute. But we know that Krishna says in Gita that the soul, you know, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these things present. So the individuality is always there. It cannot be annihilated. So that is compared to a poisonous snake. And then, you know, one gets carried over by the different siddhis, one gets these different siddhis, and then one thinks I'm God. If one can produce a little bit of dust, he thinks he's God. I'm reading this book, The Journey Home. It's His Holiness Radhan Maharaj. He meets some yogi in the Himalayas. I can't recall his name. But that yogi, through his mystic power, he had this siddhi of prapti. So through that he got a shivling, and this he was doing a demonstration in front of thousands of people, and so he got this through his prapti siddhi, he got this shivalingam, and then from it he put it down, and from his palm, you know, ashes were constantly pouring. And after the demonstration, you know, all the people, they thronged to him. So everyone was thinking he's God, you know, he can do this. Just like, you know, there's some Baba which can produce some gold, you know, from his, through his fingers, and people think he's God. But what about the person who has owned the gold mines in Western Australia? He should be considered God. But people, this is much more quantity of gold. So he brought so many ashes and he poured it over the shivaling until it was fully covered. And then everyone is thronging, they're saying he's God. Suddenly he stops them and he says, I'm not God, you know, God, I can produce few ashes or get them from somewhere. But what about God who owns the universe, who creates so many universes? What about him? So then he brings people to the consciousness to the proper place. So the yogis, they tend to think they're God. through mystic siddhis. So then, the astrologer said, you should dig on the east. On the east is the, you'll find the treasure on the east. And the treasure is love of God. Is there. So in this way we can see that Mahaprabhu gave this instruction that, and we can even see that if the more you go east, the more you find Krishna consciousness, you know. So we see that that the purpose of studying the Vedic literature is to understand Krishna. Krishna says in Gita, Vedaista Sivaya Aham Eva Vedya, that the purpose of studying the Vedanta is to understand him. We can see like in the Chaitanya Leela, the impersonal is headed by Prakashananda Saraswati. You know, they were studying Vedanta Sutra for so many years, you know, sannyasis, they're studying. But their understanding was totally wrong. Though Vedanta Sutra is the summary of the Vedic literature. And it actually points towards Krishna. You know, as Krishna says that the purpose of studying Vedanta is to know me. But their understanding of Krishna was impersonal. You know, after tediously studying the Vedic literature, they came to this understanding. And we can also see Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy at the Jagannath temple, Puri temple, so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took him to his home and then he taught him Vedanta for 7 days. And Mahaprabhu didn't speak a word for 7 days. So he asked him, you know, have you even understood anything or not? You know, it's like, you know, you give a lecture and, you know, nobody responds, you know. Everybody is just like sitting dumb and there's no response. So it makes you wonder, you know, like, have they even understood anything or they're sleeping or what? So after 7 days he asked him, you know, have you even understood anything? And so Mahaprabhu says, you know, I could not understand anything what he said. And then he teaches him the Vedanta Sutra. He gives his explanation and then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he submits to him. So we see similarly Prakashananda Saraswati, he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, you're a sannyasi, you're meant to study the Vedanta, you know, what are you doing chanting this Hare Krishna Mahamantra like a madman, you know? What are you and your associates doing on the streets chanting Hare Krishna? You know? So you're a sannyasi, you're meant to study Vedanta Sutra. You know, you're meant to renounce the world and you're meant to study. You know, sometimes people think Hare Krishna is a mad, you know. They're jumping and dancing on the street. You know, they should be doing better things. So similarly, they thought like that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, my spiritual master has said that I'm a fool. You know, I need to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Because chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is actually the essence of all the Vedic literature. All essence of all the Vedas is to chant Hare Krishna. And also there's that this verse in the Gita 8:28, Vedeshu Yagyeshu Tapasu Chaiva Daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam atyeti tat sarvam idam viditva yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. A person who accepts the path of devotion service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and spiritual activities. Simply by performing devotion service, he attains all these, and at the end he reaches the supreme eternal goal. So it's not that, you know, if you do devotional service, you are bereft of the result of, you know, rituals or charity or all the different, you know, examples given in this verse. You're not bereft of the result. But as Krishna mentioned in the Gita, that Krishna says, I am the sacrifice. I am the oblations. I am the offering. I am the butter. You know, so actually the sacrifice is Krishna. But if one is performing devotional service or chanting Hare Krishna, he's actually You know, he's actually engaging in Krishna consciousness. So he's not bereft of the results, because that sacrifice is also Krishna. And another interesting point in the purport is that there are so many Upanishads in Vedic literature that actually, in order to understand the Vedic literature, you know, in its proper context, one needs a bona fide spiritual master. Without the help of a spiritual master, one cannot understand the Vedic literature. One cannot get the conclusion. So we see with the Prabhupada and Acharyas how they are very expertly given the conclusion of the Vedic literature in their purports. Like, and nice example is given of the Ishopanishad. You know, imagine if Prabhupada didn't write his commentary on the Ishopanishad, and we just pick it up and we read it, you know, chances are we'll get a totally different understanding. That, because Krishna is not, you know, directly mentioned in the Ishopanishad, but Srila Prabhupada, by his expertise, you know, and the knowledge coming down from the Acharyas, he actually gives the proper conclusion that actually Ishopanishad is actually pointing to Krishna. So we can see how Srila Prabhupada, very expertly in his all his books, especially like in Bhagavad Gita, every verse he gives the conclusion of the Gita. You know, if you read every purport, you come across Krishna so many times. Like, first time when I was reading Gita, I thought, you know, what is this? You know, there's Krishna in every sentence. Every sentence there's Krishna, there's devotion service, there's Krishna. But then later I asked devotees, why is it like this? And they told me actually that if we, like, for example, you read the third chapter, Karma Yoga, you know, because already our tendency is towards fruitive activities. And then we can get caught up into karma yoga, you know, into fruitive activities. So, but Srila Prabhupada, he gives the conclusion, you know, in every verse. And even if we read Srila Prabhupada's books, then we can actually understand the Acharya's commentary. If we pick up the Acharya's commentary without reading Srila Prabhupada's books, again, chances are we can get misled. Because Srila Prabhupada, he knows our mentality. You know, he knows our mentality, and he has written these books according to our mentality. So that's why Srila Prabhupada said that all his disciples should read his books. And he said that we should become like the Christians know their Bible thoroughly. So we should very scrutinizingly study the books, Srila Prabhupada's books. And my spiritual master gave me this instruction. He told me that the bhakti and the purport should come out of your ears and nose. It should come out from everywhere. So that's how we have to study. Even more important than studying the Acharya's commentary is actually first to understand Srila Prabhupada's purports, what he has given in it. Because they are specially meant for us. You know, and when we get old or something, you know, invalid, maybe. Because Srila Prabhupada is, if we assimilate Srila Prabhupada's purports, we can also preach very effectively. Srila Prabhupada said, you know, now I'm leaving this world, but everything is in my purports. You simply read them and you can push forward the movement simply by these purports. So everything is there in Srila Prabhupada's purports. We simply have to very soberly assimilate it. So are there any comments or questions?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, there is so many people who are talking about this. guru who basically gives you a sense of Krishna. But we have a lot of people who say we don't even have, you know, Sai Baba and consorts. So some people, they fall trapped to that kind of philosophy and they get enamored by, you know, some mystic path which people so easily get impressed by. So how can we raise, because, you know, like these people have given their heart to like a certain kind of teacher, there's like, there's some bonds between them and we can't just cut right into it and tell them that they're all cheating and stuff. How can we very carefully make them understand that they've been misguided even though they're like, you know, like, you know, we all know how we relate to our guru, we want to give our heart and our life to them. So when a person comes to that point where they're already given their heart, how can we very carefully explain to them that they actually have been cheated?
Yeah, it's not very easy, because of course in one sense they want to be cheated. Srila Prabhupada said, cheaters and the cheated, you know. Because they want to be cheated, they are approaching such bogus gurus. So if they have some intelligence, they can think, you know, that if somebody is producing gold from his hand, that, you know, he cannot be God. You know, what about a person who owns the mind and all the universe? So they want to be cheated. Best way is to, I think it's not to directly say that, you know, you are being cheated, but to point out the defects in the philosophy in a very subtle manner. You can do it in a joking manner, you know. It's like, what about the person who owns all the minds? Then he should be God, you know. So you can put this thought into their mind, you know, slowly, gradually, by exposing it. You don't have to directly say, you know, that person is bogus. Otherwise, they become even unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. So in a very subtle manner, you expose it. I mean, in some cases, Prabhupada would, you know, directly, you know, smash them, you know, hit a hammer on their head and say, you know, that person is a rascal and, you know, what you're following is nonsense. I mean, if you're on the street distributing books and somebody comes, you don't have much of a relationship with them, then you can smash them. But if you have a, you know, bit of a relationship with the person, and maybe you can do it in a very subtle manner, gradually you can point out and detect. Give him the genuine thing, give him Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada can do all the preaching. Sometimes as we preach, we, you know, we end up in trouble, but you can give him Srila Prabhupada's books, they can do the preaching. At least that doubt will come into their mind, you know, and they might not accept it, but they will think over time, and they might gradually change. Any other comments, questions?
Taking a cue from whatever Mataji has, many of the times when we are cultivating people, sometimes people come new for the program. It's easy for us to convince them about gurus who are producing gold, because Prabhupada's basic philosophy, if we give them, they understand. You know, there's a difference between matter and spirit. But the challenge really comes when people have already, you know, attended supposed Vaishnava, they have supposed Vaishnava, then it becomes even more challenging, because my guru is also talking about Krishna. And we have had situations where people are very attached to professional Bhagavatas. People who normally come from the northern side of Gujarat and Delhi, these areas, because there is high prevalence of professional Bhagavatas there. And their music is very attractive, they come with a big band. And you know, we had cases of such members come to our program. as you rightly pointed out, we ensured that we didn't shake their faith, because somewhere I think Srila Prabhupada writes that we should not create anxiety in the minds of people who we are trying to cultivate. We have to do it gradually. There has to be, you know, we need patience in teaching. So you know, we have to say indirectly, maybe, you know, sitting and giving a general class. And we also sometimes make it a point to ensure that when we are talking about a point which is relevant to one person, we don't look at that person, we look at everyone else.
Thank you. Prabhu is very expert in preaching.
No, no,
he knows how to handle.
After a lot of, you know, when you get hit many times.
takes a lot of experience, you know. General tendency is with the new preacher to just smash everybody. You all admire, he's bogus, you know, things like that. So it requires a lot of maturity in Krishna consciousness to handle such cases.
Because we have had people, you know, who stopped talking to us because, you know, we indirectly said that, you know, Sai Baba is not God. They stopped talking to us. And of course, eventually one of them, you know, I heard in Toronto there was this couple who used to come, and they then went all the way to their Sai group and said that, you know, these people are preaching all these things, that Sai Baba is not God, and they also got very annoyed. But the same lady today is a disciple of their Tathagata Maharaj. Same thing. Because one and Prabhupada makes them realize some way. If they have a genuine desire for seeking the spirit, the truth, but unfortunately because of their karma or whatever they are in the wrong hands, Prabhupada has a way of bringing them back. This lady once went to one of the Sai group, and here one thing is there, Prabhupada always stresses on four regulative principles. So people inherently know that meat eating is bad. So when they went and asked one of their, you know, Sai Baba guru or somebody, he said, no, don't worry, can I feed my son meat? He said, yes, you can feed your son meat. And she lost faith in him because he said that. Because inherently she knew that meat eating is bad. And then she said, how can this fellow say? That means Srila Prabhupada must be right. And then she came back to the program and said, I'm sorry.
Any more questions? Sankarsana Bhagavatam.